He thought her silence was a weapon, a cruel rebellion against their forced vows. For months, the Duke punished his quiet bride with cold indifference, never realizing the tragic truth. She wasn't ignoring him. She simply couldn't hear a single word he said, until the day it almost cost her life. The biting November wind howled outside the heavy oak doors of St. George's Hanover Square, but the chill inside the church was far more profound. Augustus Kensington, the 9th Duke of Somerset, stood at the altar with his jaw clenched so tightly his teeth ached. At 32, Augustus was a man defined by duty, iron will, and a vast fortune. He was also a man who fiercely resented being backed into a corner. Walking down the aisle toward him was his bride, Lady Victoria Hawthorne. She was 20 years old, possessing an ethereal porcelain beauty that seemed entirely too fragile for the heavy, pearl-encrusted silk gown she wore. Her father, Lord George Hawthorne, a man notorious in London's underground gambling dens for his staggering debts and lack of morals, gripped her arm with a punishing tightness. Augustus knew the truth of this union. He was not gaining a partner. He was acquiring collateral. He had agreed to pay off Hawthorne's ruinous debts to secure a coveted parcel of land bordering his country estate, and Victoria was merely the ink on the contract. As she reached the altar, Augustus looked down at his new wife. Her doe-like amber eyes stared straight ahead, completely avoiding his gaze. When the vicar began the solemn vows, Augustus recited his with a deep, echoing baritone, fully expecting her to respond in turn. Instead, there was an agonizing pause. Victoria did not look at the vicar. She did not look at Augustus. She kept her eyes fixed slightly downward, only turning her head when her loyal maid, Clara, standing off to the side, subtly dropped her handkerchief. At that exact moment, Victoria murmured a breathy, almost imperceptible, "I do." Augustus's chest tightened with immediate irritation. "So this is how it will be," he thought. "The spoiled daughter resents being sold off, and she plans to punish me with her petulance." The carriage ride to the sprawling Somerset Manor in the countryside was agonizingly tense. The rain lashed against the glass windows, and the rhythmic clopping of the horse's hooves filled the heavy silence between the newlyweds. Augustus sat on one side of the tufted leather interior, swirling a glass of scotch, while Victoria sat rigid as a statue on the other, her gaze locked on the passing, rain-blurred landscape. "I do not expect you to love me, Victoria," Augustus finally said, his voice cutting through the gloom. "I am well aware of the transactional nature of our marriage, but I do expect basic courtesy. You are the Duchess of Somerset now. You will carry the title with dignity, and you will not make a fool of me in public." He waited. Victoria continued to stare out the window, completely motionless. "Did you hear me?" Augustus demanded, his temper flaring. He leaned forward and roughly grabbed her forearm. Victoria flinched violently. She whipped her head around, her eyes wide with genuine terror. For a fleeting second, her gaze darted to his mouth, her brow furrowing in deep concentration. But Augustus, blinded by his own injured pride, only saw a woman pulling away from his touch in absolute disgust. He released her arm immediately, his face hardening into a mask of pure ice. "Very well, madam. If it is a silent war you wish to wage, you will find I am an exceptionally patient adversary. Keep to your wing of the manor. I will keep to mine." When Augustus turned his back to her, he missed the tears that instantly spilled over Victoria's dark lashes. He missed the way her trembling fingers reached out toward his coat, only to pull back in defeat. What the cold Duke of Somerset did not know, what no one outside of her ruthless father and her devoted maid knew, was that Victoria was completely deaf. When she was 7 years old, a brutal bout of scarlet fever had swept through the Hawthorne estate. It had nearly claimed her life, and when the fever finally broke, it took her hearing with it. Lord Hawthorne, a man obsessed with appearances and terrified of the social stigma attached to defective offspring, had violently forbidden her from using sign language. He deemed her damaged goods, locking her away with tutors who ruthlessly trained her to read lips and mimic the cadences of speech. She was taught to smile, to nod, and to remain as decorative and silent as the porcelain vases in their drawing room. Her father's final warning before putting her in the carriage had been explicit. "You will not tell the Duke of your affliction." He paid for a perfect wife. "If he discovers you are broken, he will cast you into an asylum, and I will not lift a finger to save you." Trapped in a silent world, married to a massive, intimidating stranger who radiated anger she couldn't understand, Victoria folded her hands in her lap and prepared to endure her gilded cage. The first 3 months at Somerset Manor were a masterclass in isolation. The estate was a sprawling, echoing labyrinth of dark wood paneling marble floors and vaulted ceilings. For Augustus, the silence of the manor was a sanctuary where he could bury himself in estate ledgers, parliamentary correspondence, and the management of his tenant farms. For Victoria, it was a beautiful, terrifying void. She navigated her new life entirely through vibrations and hypervigilant observation. She learned the heavy rhythmic thud of Augustus's boots through the floorboards, knowing exactly when he was entering the dining room, so she could stand in superficial respect. She learned to read the sharp, condescending curl of Lady Agnes's lips. Lady Agnes Augustus's widowed aunt, who resided in the East Wing, had taken an immediate and vicious dislike to the new Duchess. Agnes was a woman who traded in gossip and demanded absolute deference. At afternoon teas, Agnes would sit across from Victoria and deliver perfectly poisoned insults. "It is a wonder my nephew chose a bride with all the warmth of a tombstone," Agnes would say, smoothly pouring the Earl Grey. "Though I suppose breeding will out. The Hawthornes always were a dim-witted, arrogant lot." Because Agnes often spoke while looking down at her teacup obscuring her lips, Victoria had no idea what was being said. Instructed by her father's cruel training, Victoria would simply offer a soft, serene smile and take a sip of her tea. To Agnes, and soon to the rest of the household staff, this unbothered smiling silence was infuriating. They believed Victoria to be unbelievably arrogant, an ice queen who thought herself too superior to even acknowledge the people around her. The servants began to test her. A footman might drop a heavy silver tray right behind her chair. When Victoria didn't even flinch, they took it as proof of her absolute unfeeling coldness. Only Clara, hovering nervously in the background, knew the agonizing truth, but she was sworn to secrecy under threat of immediate dismissal. Augustus observed his wife from a distance, torn between simmering resentment and a reluctant, baffling fascination. When he watched her in the rose gardens, she seemed like a different person. From the window of his study, he would see her kneeling in the dirt, her rigid posture completely gone. She would trace the petals of the blooming roses with agonizing tenderness, burying her face in them as if consuming them. She painted beautifully in the sunroom, her canvases exploding with vibrant, chaotic colors that completely contradicted the dull, emotionless facade she presented to him. Why Augustus tortured himself late at night over a glass of brandy, does she reserve all her warmth for the flowers, and nothing but stone for her husband whenever they were forced together at the painfully quiet dinners or formal Sunday church services, he would try to engage her. But unless she was looking directly at his mouth, his words fell into the void. Augustus, a man used to being hung upon by every ear in Parliament, found her lack of attention infuriating. He stopped trying. They became two ghosts haunting the same house. The breaking point arrived in early April, during the first significant social event Augustus hosted at the Manor, a spring garden exhibition to showcase his prized new stallion, an aggressive, towering Arabian horse named Midnight. The manicured lawns of Somerset Manor were dotted with local aristocrats, wealthy landowners, and their gossiping wives. Victoria was seated on a wrought-iron bench near the edge of the paddock, her back to the riding ring. She was busy sketching the distant tree line, completely absorbed in her charcoal. Clara had been sent inside to fetch a parasol, leaving Victoria alone. In the paddock, Augustus was holding the stallion's reins. Midnight was agitated by the crowds, his ears pinned back, hooves stamping the turf. A sudden sharp crack of thunder rolled across the sky from an approaching spring storm. The noise spooked the massive animal. Midnight reared up his front hooves, slashing the air. The groom holding the gate panicked and dropped the latch. With a terrifying whinny, the 1,200-pound stallion bolted. He crashed through the wooden gate, kicking it to splinters, and charged blindly into the garden. The crowd erupted into screams. Women scattered, dropping their parasols and teacups. "Catch him!" Augustus roared, sprinting after the beast. Then Augustus's blood ran cold. The horse was barreling straight toward the wrought-iron bench, straight toward Victoria. "Victoria!" Augustus screamed, his voice tearing his throat. "Victoria, move!" She didn't move. She didn't even turn her head. She remained hunched over her sketchbook, carefully shading the trunk of an oak tree, completely oblivious to the thundering hooves tearing up the grass just 30 yards behind her. "Victoria," Lady Agnes shrieked from the terrace, genuine horror finally breaking her composed facade. The entire party was screaming her name. She just kept drawing. Augustus pushed his legs to their absolute limit. He threw himself forward just as the stallion was about to trample the bench. He collided with Victoria, wrapping his heavy arms around her waist and tackling her off the iron seat. They crashed violently into the soft, muddy earth of the flower beds, just as Midnight's hooves smashed the bench to pieces, bending the iron like twigs. For a moment, the world stopped. Augustus lay panting, his heart hammering against his ribs, his arms shielding his wife's body. He looked down at her. Victoria was staring up at him, her charcoal-stained hands trembling against his chest. Her eyes were wide, dilated, with absolute shock and terror. The adrenaline in Augustus's veins instantly curdled into volcanic rage. He scrambled to his knees, pulling her up by her shoulders. "Are you insane?" he bellowed, his voice echoing across the now silent garden. He was shaking her slightly, his face red with fury. "Are you trying to get yourself killed just to spite me? The entire garden was screaming your name. You didn't even flinch." Victoria's chest heaved. She looked frantically around, seeing the shattered bench, the runaway horse being corralled in the distance, and the horrified faces of the guests staring at them. She realized with a crushing wave of humiliation what had just happened. She looked back to Augustus's face. His mouth was moving rapidly, his brow furrowed in rage, but he was speaking far too quickly, his head moving erratically. She couldn't read his lips. She had no idea what he was saying. The overwhelming sensory deprivation, the near-death experience, and the terrifying anger of her husband finally broke her. A strangled, unnatural sob tore from her throat. She didn't speak. She couldn't trust her own uncalibrated voice in this state of panic. Instead, her hands flew up. In a frantic, desperate blur, her fingers began to fly, making sharp, precise gestures in the air. It was the sign language she had been brutally forbidden from using for over a decade. She signed, tears streaming down her face, begging for Clara, begging for someone to explain. Augustus froze, the fury drained from his face, replaced by total, uncomprehending bewilderment. He stared at her flying, expressive hands, and then up to her weeping, terrified eyes. Clara broke through the crowd, dropping the parasol, and threw herself to the ground beside her mistress. The maid wrapped her arms around the trembling Duchess and turned her face up to the imposing Duke. "She didn't hear you, Your Grace." Clara sobbed, shielding Victoria with her own body. She couldn't hear the horse. She couldn't hear the screams. She can't hear anything at all. The wind seemed to instantly die out in the gardens of Somerset Manor. Augustus Kensington dropped his hands from his wife's shoulders as if he had been burned, the crushing weight of his own cruelty finally crashing down upon him. The heavy oak doors of the master bedchamber slammed shut, vibrating the floorboards. Augustus carried Victoria, who was still trembling uncontrollably, and laid her gently upon the velvet duvet of her massive four-poster bed. She curled inward immediately, pulling her knees to her chest, her eyes squeezed tightly shut, as if bracing for a physical blow. Augustus stood beside the bed, his broad shoulders slumped, feeling as though his own heart had been ripped from his chest. The revelation echoed through his mind, recontextualizing every infuriating interaction of the past 3 months. Her rigid posture in the carriage, her failure to respond to his demands, her serene, seemingly condescending smiles. When Lady Agnes delivered her venomous insults, it had never been arrogance. It had been survival. "She is deaf," Augustus whispered to the empty room, the words tasting like ash. "My God, she is completely deaf." A frantic knock broke his reverie. Clara, the maid, practically fell into the room, her face pale and streaked with tears. Right behind her was Lady Agnes, whose face was pinched into a mask of disgusted indignation. "Augustus, this is a scandal of epic proportions," Agnes hissed, stepping into the room with a furious rustle of silk. The entire county just witnessed the Duchess of Somerset gesturing like a mad woman in the mud. "George Hawthorne has sold us a defective, empty-headed imbecile. We must have the marriage annulled immediately and send her to an asylum before she ruins the family name." Augustus turned slowly. The look in his steel-gray eyes was so terrifyingly cold that Agnes instinctively took a step back. "Get out!" Augustus's voice was a low, lethal growl. "Augustus, be reasonable." "I said get out!" He roared, his voice thunderous enough to shake the crystal chandelier. "If you ever speak of my wife in such a vile manner again, I will strip you of your allowance and banish you to the furthest, coldest cottage on this estate. You will never set foot in this wing again. Leave us." Agnes paled her mouth, opening and closing like a landed fish, before she turned and fled the room. Augustus turned to Clara, who was weeping quietly at the foot of the bed. He knelt beside the young maid, lowering his imposing frame so he was eye level with her. "Tell me everything," he commanded gently. "Do not omit a single detail. What did Hawthorne do to her?" For the next hour, Clara poured out the agonizing history of Lady Victoria. She spoke of the scarlet fever that ravaged the Hawthorne estate in 1842 and the brutal aftermath. She detailed how Lord Hawthorne, terrified of Victorian society's draconian views on disability, locked his daughter in the attic with abusive tutors. Victoria was beaten if she used her hands to communicate. She was starved until she learned to perfectly mimic the shape of vowels on her captor's lips. She lived every waking moment in terror of being discovered, knowing her father would condemn her to the horrific conditions of the Bethlehem Royal Hospital, infamously known as Bedlam, if she embarrassed him. Augustus listened, his stomach twisting into violent knots. He had thought himself a victim of a bad business arrangement, but he had unknowingly been playing the role of Victoria's new tormentor. He had left her stranded in a silent, hostile fortress. She thinks you are going to send her away. Your Grace, Clara sobbed, looking at Victoria, who was still curled into a defensive ball, watching them with wide, terrified eyes. She couldn't read your lips in the garden because you were moving too fast. She thinks you are furious. Augustus felt a tear break free and track down his cheek. He stood up, slowly approaching the bed. He sat on the edge, ensuring the mattress dipped so Victoria could feel the vibration of his presence. She flinched, but she opened her eyes, looking at his mouth. Augustus took a deep, shuddering breath. He made sure the warm glow of the gaslight illuminated his face perfectly. He spoke slowly, deliberately, over-enunciating every single syllable so she could catch the shapes. I am not angry. Victoria blinked her amber eyes, searching his face for deceit. Augustus slowly reached out and took her trembling, mud-stained hands in his large, warm palms. He brought them to his chest, placing them directly over his heart so she could feel its steady, calming rhythm. You are safe. He mouthed, his eyes locked onto hers, filled with a desperate, crushing remorse. I swear it. The walls Victoria had spent 13 years building finally shattered. She collapsed against his chest, burying her face in the lapel of his ruined coat, and wept. For the first time in his life, Augustus Kensington didn't care about the mud, the scandal, or his pride. He wrapped his arms around his wife and held her tightly, vowing to burn down the entire world before he let anyone hurt her again. The next day, Augustus sent an urgent private telegraph to London. He summoned Dr. Joseph Toynbee, the most eminent oral surgeon in the country and a pioneer at St. Mary's Hospital, renowned for his compassionate understanding of auditory ailments. Augustus paid an astronomical sum for the doctor's immediate discretion. When Dr. Toynbee arrived at Somerset Manor, he conducted a thorough, gentle examination. Afterward, in Augustus's study, the doctor sighed, pouring a glass of port. The nerve damage from the fever is absolute, Your Grace, Dr. Toynbee explained. There is no cure. However, I must express my profound astonishment. For Her Grace to navigate high society, purely through lip-reading and situational awareness, requires an intellect of staggering brilliance. She is not broken, Duke. She is extraordinary. I know, Augustus said softly, staring into the fireplace. But she is isolated, and I will no longer allow it. That evening, Augustus made a decision that would forever alter the course of their marriage. He cleared his calendar. He handed the management of his estates to his stewards. He locked the doors to his study, and he sat down with Clara. Teach me, Augustus commanded, rolling up the sleeves of his expensive linen shirt. Teach you what, Your Grace? Clara asked nervously. Everything, Augustus replied fiercely. The alphabet, the gestures. Teach me how to speak to my wife. For the next month, the Duke of Somerset became a student. Late into the night, by the flickering light of the hearth, Augustus relentlessly drilled his hands. His large, calloused fingers, used to gripping reins and signing parliamentary acts, struggled with the delicate, fluid motions of sign language. But he was driven by a burning, obsessive need to reach the woman trapped in the silence. Victoria noticed the change. Augustus stopped expecting her to attend agonizingly stiff dinners. Instead, he arranged for them to eat in the sunroom, where the light was perfect for her to read his lips. He was endlessly patient, repeating himself without a hint of the frustration he once showed. Then came the rainy Tuesday afternoon that changed everything. Victoria was in the library, sitting by the window, watching the rain streak the glass. She felt the heavy, familiar vibration of Augustus's boots approaching. She turned, offering him her customary guarded smile. Augustus stopped in front of her. He didn't speak a word. Instead, he took a deep breath, raised his hands, and began to move them. His gestures were slightly stiff, clumsy with hesitation, but unmistakable. I am sorry. Victoria froze, her breath caught in her throat. Augustus's hands continued his eyes, locked onto hers with piercing vulnerability. I was blind. You are beautiful. Victoria's hands flew to her mouth. Tears instantly sprang to her eyes. It was the first time in 13 years a man of authority had not punished her for her silence, but had stepped into it with her. Her hands graceful and quick as hummingbird signed back, "You learned this for me." Augustus, struggling to catch her rapid movements, asked her to slow down. When he understood, he nodded, smiling softly. He raised his hands one last time. "I am your husband. I will always hear you." The transformation of Somerset Manor was miraculous. The echoing, lonely halls were suddenly filled with life, though not with noise. Augustus and Victoria developed a beautiful secret language. He learned her quick, expressive signs, and she learned the subtle micro-expressions of his face. They fell deeply, irrevocably in love. Victoria's true personality, sharp-witted, fiercely observant, and wonderfully playful, finally bloomed. She began painting portraits of Augustus, and he in turn filled her sunroom with the rarest orchids he could import. But their sanctuary was brutally threatened as autumn approached. A carriage bearing the hawthorn crest arrived unannounced at Somerset Manor. Lord George Hawthorne stormed into the grand foyer, his face flushed with gin and arrogance. Rumors of the garden incident had finally reached his ears in London, along with whispers that the Duke was hiding his wife away. Augustus intercepted Hawthorne before he could even reach the grand staircase. "What is the meaning of this intrusion?" "Hawthorne," Augustus demanded, his voice dropping to a dangerous register, "I have come to fix the mess you've made." "Somerset," Hawthorne sneered, waving a gloved hand. "I hear my defective daughter made a spectacle of herself. I warned her. If you want to keep this quiet and avoid the humiliation of being married to a deaf mute, it will cost you another £50,000 transferred to my accounts immediately. Otherwise, I will take her to Bethlehem Asylum myself, declare her legally insane, and the marriage will be annulled. You can keep your pride, and I will take my daughter back to the cell where she belongs." Augustus didn't yell. He didn't strike the man, though every muscle in his body begged to tear Hawthorne limb from limb. Instead, a terrifyingly calm, predatory smile spread across Augustus's face. "Come into my study, George," Augustus said smoothly. Confused but emboldened, Hawthorne followed. Once the doors were shut, Augustus walked to his mahogany desk and unlocked a heavy iron strongbox. He pulled out a thick stack of parchment papers, bound in red ribbon, and tossed them onto the desk. Hawthorne looked down. His blood ran cold. "These," Augustus said softly, "are every single promissory note, gambling marker, and debt of honor you possess. I spent the last 3 months dealing quietly with Coutts and Cumber's Bank and the darkest, most dangerous lenders in London. I bought them all, every last penny." Hawthorne began to sweat profusely, his eyes darting toward the door. What does this mean?" "It means," Augustus whispered, stepping into Hawthorne's personal space until the older man was backed against the wall, "that I own you. Your estate, your carriages, the very clothes on your back belong to me. If you ever speak my wife's name again, if you ever come within 100 miles of this county, I will call in these debts. You will rot in Fleet Prison for the rest of your miserable life, and I will personally ensure the guards treat you with the exact level of mercy you showed your daughter." Augustus grabbed Hawthorne by the collar, lifting him onto his toes. "Victoria is the Duchess of Somerset. She is a queen in this world. You are nothing but dirt beneath her shoes. Get out of my house. Hawthorn fled the manor like a beaten dog, never to be seen in polite society again. The final triumph came in December, at the height of the winter social season. The Duchess of Sutherland, a close confidant of Queen Victoria, was hosting the most exclusive ball of the year at Stafford House, in London. The invitations were highly coveted, and society was buzzing with malicious anticipation. The gossip held that the Duke of Somerset would surely leave his eccentric wife in the country to spare himself the embarrassment. When the massive gilded doors of the Stafford House ballroom swung open, the string quartet faltered for a fraction of a second. Augustus Kensington stood at the top of the grand staircase. On his arm was Victoria. She was breathtaking in a gown of midnight blue velvet diamonds dripping from her collarbone, radiating a quiet, absolute majesty. As they descended the stairs, the room fell into a hushed, judgmental silence. Lady Agnes, who had managed to secure an invitation, stood near the punch bowl with a group of gossiping dowagers, a smug smile on her face, waiting for the inevitable disaster. Augustus led Victoria to the center of the room. He didn't leave her in a corner. He didn't instruct her to smile and nod. Instead, right in front of the most powerful aristocrats in England, Augustus turned to his wife. He raised his hands completely unashamed and signed to her in fluid, beautiful motions. "You are the most beautiful woman in this room. Shall we dance?" Victoria's eyes sparkled with unshed tears of pure joy. She smiled a radiant, genuine smile that blinded the room. She signed back, "I would love nothing more." As the orchestra struck up a waltz, Augustus pulled her into his arms. They moved flawlessly across the floor, guided by the vibrations of the cello and the perfect, synchronized rhythm of their bodies. They were in their own world, a world built on patience, fiercely protective love, and a silence that was no longer empty, but filled with the profound language of their hearts. The cold Duke had indeed despised her silence until it became the only voice he ever wanted to hear. If this story of silent strength and fierce, protective love captured your heart, don't keep it to yourself. Hit that like button to show your support. Share this video with fellow romance lovers who crave deep emotional twists, and subscribe to the channel for more sweeping historical dramas. Ring the notification bell so you never miss a tale of love conquering all. What was your favorite moment? Let me know in the comments below.